Greetings and welcome to
Throttle Up.
And this is a radio show and soon to be a podcast that showcases critical thinking. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, before we get into the show, I would like to extend my greetings and welcome to everyone with a somewhat belated but sincere Happy New Year to everyone out there. Happy New Year to all of you tuning in and the Red State Talk Radio listeners. I hope 2018 is a great year for each and every one of you. And for us in Throttle Up Radio, we are planning to expand our footprint a bit, and we're looking forward to 2018 as another successful year. So what we're planning to do as we are, and I mentioned this before, but we're planning to get our podcast capability up and running, and we actually do have a podcast capability on our website. So the throttleupradio.com is our website. And so we have a podcast capability there. And so you can go to our website. You can download some shows that we have posted on that website. And soon, I understand from my podcast experts, we will be having the Throttle Up Radio podcast available on a number of other podcast outlets. Exactly who they are, I don't have that in front of me, and I can't tell you right now, but it should be available in the normal podcast outlets. That, or another way of saying that, I guess, and a more accurate way of saying that is that there's a number of websites that host podcasts in various forms and categories, and so we should have our podcast up on those websites that offer podcasts as a general rule. We're also planning on a newsletter. Exactly when, not sure, but it'll be fairly soon. And we have our constant contact list pretty much organized, and that's ready to go. And also we're doing and this is really kind of an exciting thing for all of us here, we're doing a video series. We're starting a video series on critical thinking, and it's being produced for a veterans organization. It's called the Veterans Transition Resource Center, and they have an internet TV channel, which we will be announcing that channel soon on some future shows, and also the name of the series of videos that that are being produced. And that we're involved in producing these video series. And I'm not sure how many we're looking at. I think probably we're looking at 6 videos and maybe more that will be posted on this website TV channel. So that's another exciting thing going on in 2018 for us. So all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a radio show that is powered by, of course, High Velocity Reason. And from time to time, I explain what that means. It's kind of a new word, but we'll try to get all of these things defined and all of us comfortable with some of the terms that we throw out here. Now, I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator, and also I've worked for a long time in this area of critical thinking, probably one of the earlier pioneers in what we call the modern version of critical thinking. And so I guess that's one of my areas of expertise. And so we're trying to bring this stuff that I was involved in many years ago, trying to bring this mainstream to make it available to a wider audience. So let's see. Our tagline is to accelerate beyond the ordinary, and our motto is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. Our mission statement, and this changes from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement right now, is to provide our listening audience And fairly soon, it'll be also our video audience. But right now, provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. And let's say our website is throttleupradio.com, and that's throttleupradio.com. And the audio engineering services for Throttle Up Radio is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado. That's right outside of Denver on the western side. So they're in the foothills of what is called the Eastern Front of the Rocky Mountains, and they are a great group of folks to work with. Have enjoyed working with them over the last year and a half, and looking forward to another very productive year with them. Also, the promotional material that is available and we send out from time to time, and we have it's an outdoor bulletin board. I was going to call it an electronic bulletin board, but another term for that. It's a digital bulletin board, and it's located near Times Square in New York City. And that bulletin board, digital bulletin board, is owned by a subsidiary of Red State Talk Radio. And we have an ad. Throttle Up Radio has an ad running. It's been running for a couple of months on that bulletin board. And it's my understanding that it's still running. It's going to run this month. And it looks really good. All right. So the feedback we're getting is that it's a great outdoor ad. It's rather short, but it gets right to the point. And it, of course, it advertises and highlights the show, radio show, Throttle Up Radio. So it's a great ad, and it was designed by a gal, and her name is Jennifer, and she is a principal in Standout Handouts Media Organization. And so her website, if you're looking for graphics artist capabilities or developing promotional material, and she's probably the best that I've ever encountered in my long career in this field. I think she's just hands down the best. All right. So her name is Jennifer, and she is a principal in Standout Handouts. That website is standouthandouts.com. And her phone number is 435-574-0422. Give her a call if you're looking for some really great ideas in terms of promotional material. And it could be any form or function. We have used it and used her services in many ways. And everything that she has done for us has been really quite extraordinary. All right, so our show, as you well know, is organized into three parts. Part one is, of course, a continuing discussion of critical thinking. Part two is our storyboard, typically it's a story of America. It talks about, generally speaking, it talks about what's going on currently in America, how we should think about it from a critical thinking standpoint, and so it's going to be different than what you typically get on most news shows. This is a different kind of a radio program. It's not common, if you will. It's not standard. It's different. It's different. It is new. Hopefully, it is of more interest than just another talk show on the political arena. And part three is our radio essay, and that could be a number of things. This week it happens to be a discussion of a particular book, so it's kind of like a book report, if you will, but it is relevant to what, at least we think, it's relevant to what is going on today in this country and across the world. So, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers are welcome with open arms, and hopefully where America finds solutions. Now let's press on to part one. Okay, this is Trottle Up Part 1 for this week. And before I start my discussion of continuing discussion, of critical thinking, I wanted to mention again this Future of Jobs report. All right, so Future of Jobs report is published by the World Economic Forum, and they predicted by the year 2020 that critical thinking and complex problem solving will be the most in-demand set of skills in the global job market, but also the hardest to fill. All right, so that pretty much points out the reason why we have such a show as Throttle Up and why we talk about it and spend some quality time on this show to talk about critical thinking. Because across the board, if you will, across the our individual lives and the lives of our community and the lives of our country, if we don't understand how to think critically, then we are not going to exist for very long. We will perish, and we will go the way of history. And in many cases, countries wind up in the dustbin of history because they weren't very good at what they tried to do. And I can maybe point out to a number of communist countries that have done so. But that's not going to happen to America, because I think America understands how to reinvent itself, how to get rid of things that don't work, and adopt those things that do. America is very much action oriented. So I guess what we're trying to do here is we're trying to help this along as we move into the 2018, into what I call the new intellectual frontier. We're going to try to help this along, as well as you should do that, do the same thing in whatever capacity or whatever means that you have to do, take an active role in moving America along into the new intellectual frontier, where new ideas are embraced, new ways of solving problems are discovered and implemented. And that is the way that we are going to progress as individuals and as a society and as a culture, and to better the plight of mankind on this planet. Because I do think that the reason why we are here and the reason why we live in America is ultimately to help all of us progress, help all of us prosper, and become better humans in the process. Okay, so the question for us today is a kind of a similar discussions that we've had over the last few weeks. The question that we have today is this: is critical thinking a nice sounding academic curiosity, or does it have operational applications? In other words, can you actually use critical thinking in the real world, or does it just sort of like reside in the world of books, in the world of academia, that is of interest largely to academicians, but it doesn't have much application to real world, the messy, undetermined or indeterminate world of a real life, if you will, or real activities or actual activities or real operations? And I'm going to answer that. So obviously that it's clear, I think, to most of the listeners out there, and we try to make this clear, is that the critical thinking can be used in a real world setting. It can be used operationally. And that's one of our, you know, one of our calls to purpose here on Throttle Up Radio, where our purpose is to explain how to do that. Well, first of all, to let all of us know, including us here, that we can do it, right? This is something that we can do. And then after we establish that as a foundational principle, then how, if we can do it, then how do we do it? What is the ways? What's the mechanisms? What's the resources that are necessary to put in place that will allow us to employ critical thinking in this complex world of ours and to do better at understanding this complex world and also to understand how to more effectively perform complex problem solving? And so the answer is yes, it can be used operationally. But in order for us to use critical thinking operationally, we have to understand something about where it's going to be used. We have to learn something about the environment. Now, all environments are not created equal. So what do I mean by that? All environments are not created equal. They are, some are different than others. And how are they different from one another? And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, critical thinking then should be used in conjunction with other areas to consider if we are going to apply critical thinking in environments that are not usual or not standard or not benign. So if we have environments that are, and the way we're going to do this is we're going to sort of like define some terms here. If we have environments that are complex, then we need to take the environment into account along with applying the principles of critical thinking. We need to consider critical thinking in terms of whether or not the environment is simple or whether or not the environment is not simple, but it is complex. Now, to be clear about this, there is a difference between confusing and complex. We're not going to get, you know, overly involved in that. Just be aware of the fact that a situation or an environment could be confusing, but that may be easily solved. But a situation or an environment could also be complex, and that's not so easy to understand. That is not so easy to solve. And so we have to understand what it means to be involved in a complex environment or a complex situation. And then how can we best consider that with respect to our employment of critical thinking? And so if we are going to employ critical thinking, it ought to be applicable or useful in all kinds of environments. But there is going to have to be some adjustments made to the way we consider things if the environment is actually complex. So what I have written here is that for best results, critical thinking should be used in conjunction with other areas to consider concerning the situation or the environment. These other considerations are, for example, the level of complexity of the environment encountered. Now, that's pretty important. Now, there's ways to do that, and we can just say for our purposes right here and now, we're going to just look at that subjectively and consider that level of complexity is a subjective measure. It actually can be quantified, but we'll cover that later. Two, the existence of large-scale dynamic systems, are they part of the environment? So what's a large-scale dynamic system? Large-scale dynamic system, we covered this before. Okay, it could be anything. They're also called big mechanisms. They could be natural or man-made. If we're dealing with such a system, a large-scale dynamic system, another term that's often used is large-scale adaptive system. They all mean basically the same thing. So don't get confused about some of the terms I throw out here. They're all basically the same thing. We typically use, and I've used in my instructional videos, the term large-scale dynamic systems. Okay, what are they? They're big things. They're big mechanisms that have to deal with lots of things. They have many components all working together, interacting with one another. And the reason why they exist is because they do things that otherwise cannot be done. So they are rather important. Whether they're natural or man-made, they are important but they are difficult to understand. They are difficult to build properly, and they are difficult to bring about a robustness in their performance. Now, the existence of purposeful activities is also part of the equation. And so when we talk about, and this is where I think a lot of treatments of critical thinking tend to fall short, and that's in the area of what I call purposeful activities. So, yeah, critical thinking is a good, you know, global thing. You know, it can be used in most applications, if not all applications. But we need to consider whether or not we're dealing with casual things or we're dealing with purposeful activities. And a purposeful activity can also be described as an operation or a mission. Now, in medicine, they typically called it an operation, all right? In my field of aviation, we typically call it a mission, or the total picture is a mission. Maybe a partial portion of that could be an operation. So we use the terms back and forth. An operation is a component or part of a mission. But the total mission is also an important aspect of what we do. So that's all part of this thing, what we call a purposeful activity. Is that considered? And is it worthwhile to consider it? And the answer is, well, of course it is. So we need to know what that is. We need to know what the mission statement is. We need to know the mission objectives. We need to know the components, the major operations that are performed in the performance of the mission or in the accomplishment of the mission. So all of those things are important. Now, so what does critical thinking have to do with any of this? Well, it has a lot to do with it, because in any large-scale operation or the employment of any large-scale dynamic system, we will encounter things that are unexpected. So the rule of the road here is to expect the unexpected. Once we recognize that things will happen that are unexpected, then we can sort of like look at them in terms of events. Are these events? Now, some may be expected, but often events are unexpected, and then we have to ask ourselves, okay, is the event mission critical? And if it is, then how do we respond to mission critical events? And so we get into this whole thing about, can the system respond effectively? Is it agile and adaptive such that it can respond to mission critical events? And so within that backdrop, then we can start looking at things from the perspective of critical thinking, but recognizing that we also have to consider where we are in time and space. Okay, so where are we in time and space is very important, as well as the application or the employment of critical thinking to understand and to come to grips with certain things about what we are trying to do. Now, the most important thing is actually not problem solving. And that seems to be the big misconception in a lot of spheres, a lot of areas, a lot of intellectual discussions, is that everyone thinks that problem solving is the most important thing. Actually, it's not. The most important thing is to be able to get the problem right. What exactly is the problem? So the problem definition that resides within the problem space, that needs to be dealt with in a very thorough and professional way. And so there's a good discussion about this, and I'm not exactly sure if it's true. I believe it is. I've read about it, and it was prepared as a true statement. Someone asked Einstein later on in his life, what he would do, hypothetically, if he only had 1 hour to save the world from some impending disaster. And he said that what he would do is he would spend the first 50 or 55 minutes on defining the problem, and then the rest of the time just applying some mathematics, which is fairly simple. And so to him, problem definition was the most challenging thing that we have to do as humans, as great thinkers, or as thinkers, if you will. A lot of people thought he was a great thinker, and I would agree with that. But I think that all of us are great thinkers, or all of us can be great thinkers. And so how do we do that? Is we recognize that getting the problem right goes a long way to being able to solve it, because we can, you know, we can always find ourselves working overtime, working extremely hard, trying to solve the wrong problem. And then what does that get us? Nothing. Well, it actually provides us with a negative, because we've expended a lot of energy unnecessarily. So it was a useless effort. Okay, so that's about, let me see if there's anything else we need to talk about with respect to critical thinking here in this part one. Oh, yeah, here's one more other, couple more points here. The key aspects of an operation or mission that are necessary for a successful outcome. So what are they? All right, so that's all part of this thing that we call the broader application, if you will, or the operational application of critical thinking. We need to look at it in terms of the operation or critical thinking in an operational environment. And then, of course, what resources must be secured to effectively achieve a positive outcome? All right. And then, of course, the means to determine when success has been achieved. That's often neglected, and that's an important part of it, the means to determine when success has been achieved. And so these are the measures of performance that are often neglected, but don't do that, right? And they're not that hard to figure out, absolutely not, but it just takes a little bit of time to think of those things. And the information and intelligence necessary for task completion, all right? So that pretty much concludes our discussion about critical thinking, all right? So critical thinking is done in terms of, or we can say it this way, applied critical thinking, or critical thinking when used to help us perform better a purposeful activity. What are those key aspects of critical thinking, and what are the other key aspects of consideration, if you will, with respect to this purposeful activity, and how to optimize our performance if we are, in fact, engaged in this purposeful activity? It could be anything. It could be a business opportunity. It could be a military operation. It could be a governmental program. It doesn't matter what it is, but it is, in fact, a purposeful activity. It does have a plan, does have a mission statement, or it ought to. It ought to cover all those formal aspects of a purposeful activity that have, over the years, proven themselves to be useful. And then you can go from there. All right, so that completes our discussion of critical thinking for this week, and now we're going to move on to part two. Okay, welcome back to part two of our show for this week for Throttle Up Radio. And part two, of course, is our storyboard. And our storyboard today is American Economic Recovery and the North Dakota Pipeline. Now, many of you have read about this. It's been, frankly, it's been all over the news. And so I think it's great that it has. But anyway, I wanted to cover this thing from a critical thinking perspective, because I think it's very important to understand and how this fits into what I would like to think of as, oh, what is the American economic prosperity model? What does it consist of? And do we need to think of things in terms of models first and foremost to try to get a handle on complex situations or complex environments? And the answer is yes. The way that we can understand and to deal more effectively with complex situations, complex environments, is to create what is often called a model of reality. What is going on with respect to this particular environment? Can we define it in terms of some kind of a behavioral or performance model? The answer is we can. We can do that. Now, if we do that, is that beneficial? And again, the answer is yes, it is, because we can look at it from a higher order perspective. We can look at it with respect to higher order reasoning or higher order thinking. And that's the way for us to be able to get a handle on, understand, and deal effectively with complex situations and complex environments. Okay, with respect to that, we're going to be talking about American economic recovery in the North Dakota pipeline. But keep in mind, in this discussion, we're going to, certainly we're going to drill down to some specifics, but keep in mind that we're trying to create for us an understanding of how we can define this economic prosperity model that we need to have available to us as we consider any and all aspects of the American economic system. Okay, so the North Dakota pipeline marks 6 months of operation. The cost of the project was $3.8 billion. The immediate benefit has been already realized. It's significantly lowering transportation costs of crude oil. Oil can move to the Gulf Coast, where it fetches higher prices, easier, cheaper, and faster. Consequently, we have an improved price for the oil. We have considerably lower transportation costs, and that equals improved economic performance for the North Dakota or the Bakken oil field. Now, that's a rather huge oil production area in this country. And I believe there's over 900 wells that are pumping oil, if I have my facts straight. So the North Dakota petroleum performance has been 1.185 million barrels a day, a net increase from prior to pipeline becoming operation. The net increase from prior to the pipeline becoming operational is 135,000 barrels a day, also including 15 additional drill rigs in operation since January 2017. And North Dakota unemployment rate is down to 2.3%. And 850 existing fracking wells need crews. State revenue rose to $43.5 million in the first 5 months the pipeline was operational. Okay, so everybody is sort of excited about this. I mean, even the Wall Street Journal has run an editorial about it. Everybody is excited. Everybody is considering this as part of the reason that the economy is doing much better than many had predicted it would. And this is yet one of many examples of how we can, how the government and industry can work together to provide economic benefits and economic opportunities and economic prosperity for many, many people. And so I think that the North Dakota petroleum industry is growing. You can say that it's booming, if you like that term, that's okay. And it is benefiting more and more people. And so That is a success story that all of us should be proud of. Here we have a pipeline that is in place. Here we have the industry able to move their oil much cheaper and much faster to places where they can get higher prices for it. And so everybody benefits. And even when it gets to the Gulf Coast, it's even available for exportation or to be exported to other countries. And so eventually, and it may be sooner rather than later, the United States will be a net exporter of petroleum products. So also in addition to that, the stock market for 2017 was up 25.1%. That's amazing. I would say that that's incredible, and it is well-welcomed news and well-deserved. And America needs to be proud of that because that's an American accomplishment. And America has gone back to work. America is no longer a victim on the world stage, but America has gone back to work. And Americans are now becoming more proud of their country, and Americans are working and proving that we can do things that many others can't or won't. And America is where workers prosper. America is where ideas take hold. America is a place for innovation. And America is a place for profitability. America is a place for economic viability and all of that. So America is back. It is coming back. And making America great again is being accomplished on a regular basis. So 2017 was quite amazing for the stock market. It was also amazing for domestic steel production. And this is, besides the Bakken oil field in North Dakota, this is also great news. All right. And this also came out of the Wall Street Journal in an article or two in other places, like the Steel Production Institute. So domestic steel, and that's been a rather delightful turn of events. In the past, domestic steel production has suffered because of all the cheap imports. But steelmakers now are buying or building U.S. mills after years of decline. And why is that? And this is a kind of an amazing story. Steel companies have complained for years that steel from China, South Korea, Vietnam, Turkey, and elsewhere is being sold in the United States for less than it cost to make. Now, a number of things are coming together to bolster the U.S. domestic steel industry, and that is this. One, the increase in domestic capacity is occurring. The increasing demand due to construction and energy. That is a significant part of this success story. Three, the rethinking of the steel business. And finally, the construction of flexible steel mills. Now, we're going to cover this rethinking of the American steel industry in a bit, all right? And that's a rather important and I think a rather interesting and fascinating story in itself, because we talked about these things before, but this is another example of how critical thinking can really turn around a whole industry. And that's what's happening right now in the steel industry. And it's a rather remarkable American story. We're going to cover that in a minute. But let me talk a little bit about the forecast for this is the, I guess you would say, the geopolitical forecast that Stratfor puts out on a regular basis. And they're an organization that provides insight. Their name of their organization is an acronym for strategic forecasting. Stratfor, and that's what they do. They do strategic forecasting for business and industry and governments for the world. The first thing they talk about is North Dakota oil boom continues. So obviously that's happening. I think the limiting factor right now is not oil. The limiting factor with respect to the Bakken oil field is actually workers. That's rather a remarkable turn of events, but that's true. And so all young people out there, men and women, that that are thinking of moving on to greener pastures might consider the North Dakota arena, North Dakota and surrounding states, where I think they can make quite a difference, not only productively but economically, in their lives and the lives of this this industry as well as this country. The second item that Stratfor talks about is that it's on the table for 2018 in their forecast ideas is Trump trade agenda continues to favor America, and the U.S. steel production rebound is a case in point. The other thing that they have considered in their forecast is that Russia will likely refocus policies on the Asia-Pacific region. It's the Asia-Pacific region is likely going to get more Russian focus and involvement. Also, North Korea and advancing agendas by Russia and China will work against U.S. interests. And so we need to be prepared for that. We need to have ideas in place of how we can best respond to these challenges that we face. And America will always face challenges. We'll always be faced with challenges geopolitically, globally. And how do we respond to them? Each age, each generation is going to have their set of challenges, and how can we best respond and deal with them? The first thing we can do is anticipate and be ahead of the curve. The second thing is to have in place some well-thought-out options and initiatives that have been considered. And the third thing is that we all become better at critical thinking. And this other item here on the list that Stratfor puts out is China, and they're going to be continuing their advancing their geopolitical adventurism. And big questions are on the table concerning Iran, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and so forth. Okay, those are big questions. We'll cover those in more detail in other shows. But they are something that needs to be considered, particularly from a critical thinking standpoint. Britain also, and their exit from the EU, that's going to be a big item. How is that going to play out? Pakistan is now becoming a hot-button issue, and what are they going to do? So Pakistan is now at a point of a critical decision. Are they going to move away from U.S. alliance, or are they going to throw off their radical Islamic initiatives and come back into the community of nations? Okay, and then finally Mali, and I don't have a lot of information on Mali. I'll try to get that, but that was on the list that I mentioned that came from Stratfor. Now, getting back to the steel industry, I just wanted to, and I don't have all of it, but I did want to mention that in the week ending on December 30th, 2017, domestic raw steel production was up 4.3%, and our production capacity in this country was up to 74.3%. So our production capacity is improving, right? Or the production with respect to our capacity to produce is getting above now it's almost to 75%, which, of course, is good news for the domestic steel industry. The October steel shipments were up 12.8% from the previous October. All right, so that is all great news. That's great economic news. We're looking forward to an amazing 2018. I think we're really at the beginning of this economic recovery, and I think it's going to be a long and productive and fruitful recovery for all of us Americans. So good for all of us. And make America great again, I think, is happening. It's occurring on a regular basis now, and it may very well already have occurred. And so that's great for all Americans. Congratulations. Okay, so that completes part two. Now we're going to move on to part three. Okay, welcome back to part three of Throttle Up for this week. Part three is our radio essay. And the radio essay for this week, and I guess we're going to extend this to the next few weeks, is going to be based upon a rather remarkable book. And the title of the book is Dereliction of Duty, and it's by Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. Now, all of you know, of course, that General McMaster is the National Security Advisor in the Trump administration. And correct, I'm sorry, I may be wrong, but I believe he's an Army Lieutenant General. If I'm correct, hopefully I'm correct on that. Apologize if I'm not. Apologize for General McMaster if I'm not. I believe he's an Army Lieutenant General with a very distinguished career. Now, in addition to his career, he wrote this book, and I'm assuming it was part of a dissertation he wrote for an advanced degree. I'm not even sure of that. Probably something to do with the war college that he attended. Anyway, it's a rather remarkable book, and I do think it's useful for us to understand some of the key points of the book for a couple of reasons. One is we can understand the mind of this rather remarkable individual. How does he think? What does he consider to be important? I do think after reading the book that he has a rather firm grasp of critical thinking, and he is, I would say, an accomplished critical thinker. And his book is well worth that also for another important reason, and that is what actually happened then. Everybody sort of like thinks they know about the Vietnam era with respect to this country, with respect to the military, with respect to all of the anti-war demonstrations that occurred. What was actually going on? What happened? Why did we do what we did? And why was it not a very good time for America, either domestically or internationally? And so he tries to understand it, to set the record straight, and we're going to use that as a launching point, because there are some other aspects of that era that are important for us to understand, and they are germane today. They are germane not only from a strategic standpoint, from a geopolitical standpoint, but also from a militarily active standpoint, also how we procure our weapon systems, how we train our warriors, what kind of training do we provide them before they go to war, what happens when they're not trained properly to go to war, so forth and so on. So anyway, so we are going to we don't have a lot of time right now, but we're going to start the discussion, and we're going to use this as a point of discussion for the next few weeks of this radio show, and it may extend beyond that. And if it does, that's fine. Okay, so we can start off by saying the following. This is my commentary and my personal statement. Vietnam, and of course I was involved in that. My career goes back to that era. Vietnam was the greatest geopolitical disaster in American history, representing an expenditure of enormous amount of national treasure, accomplishing nothing. And so how did we get to that place? How was it? You see what I'm doing? Not what, but how. How was it that the United States and its, you know, its record of accomplishments, its record of success, particularly in the area of World War II, how did we get to this place that we were not successful in what we tried to do? We expended an enormous amount of our national treasure, our national resources, in not only in money but in lives, which were irreplaceable, by the way. And why did that happen? And what was accomplished in with respect to that that endeavor, with respect to what the United States was involved in? And why did we even attempt to do it? Obviously, we didn't gain anything from it. No one paid us money. We didn't gain resources. We didn't gain territory. So why did we do it? So the defining years for the Vietnam War was between 1963 and 1965. This is according to General McMaster in his book. Now, during those years, he points out that a set of conflicting national objectives were on the table and were being actively considered by the Johnson administration. These were: one, the global communist expansion; item two, instability in Southeast Asia, particularly in the area of insurgency; number three, North Vietnam-inspired insurgency with respect to South Vietnam, in particular but not exclusively to that area; item four, memory of the Korean War, which loomed large on the horizon for most people that were actively involved, most senior leaders that were actively involved in the Vietnam conflict. They had may very well have had a personal memory of the Korean War, and which ended indecisively, by the way, in which we are now suffering that indecisiveness, and that is, this problem has been festering for a long time. We have never dealt with it properly. It's kind of like a medical problem that has never been dealt with properly, and so it doesn't go away. Item five, modern war was, in fact, reconsidered as a means to communicate rather than to conquer. And so we had this new notion that entered into the marketplace of ideas, which was modern warfare is now more a means to communicate than a means to conquer. So we don't want to conquer the enemy. We want to communicate with the enemy. Now, for what purpose? I don't know. And we'll get into the reason why that was done, what these people were trying to achieve in this newfangled way of conducting warfare. Okay. I believe that is the end of our show for another week. So let me conclude the show by saying that, first of all, we're going to continue this discussion of this rather remarkable book in the Vietnam era, and also my participation in it. We'll cover that. It's a rather remarkable story and the areas that I was involved in. And also, I would like to thank all my listeners out there. First of all, thank Red State Talk Radio for this opportunity once again to promote this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And thank you for all my listeners out there, and thank you, all you veterans. Thank you for your service. And thank you, the families of all your veterans. Thank you for being there and supporting the veterans and their worthy cause. Thank you, all of you on active duty in the Guard and Reserve. Thank you for serving us. All right, that completes another Throttle Up for this week. And now we will see you all next week.